nerds, jocks, and preppies. This is Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. I am your host, 8th Dan Stan Adu. I am joined by my good pal, Jim. How you doing, Jim?
I am ready to look at the flip side of the coin from Revenge of the Nerds and hear the story of the preppies. The villains preppies. Of that piece, the heroes of this.
Oh, yeah. All right. Blackjack's in the house.
What's up, kids?
Kids. All right. And finally, we got Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations from the one and only Nick Boxer.
All right. Well, I am super happy to be here to talk about Preppies because, let me tell you, Preppies is an insane movie. We are carrying on our 80s sex comedy movie season, having a blast doing it. And so, Nick Boxer, why don't you tell us what Preppies is all about?
Well, quite...
Good luck with that.
Quite simply, our protagonists are three Preppies that are on the verge of getting kicked out of prep school. Big surprise. It was in the title. The one caveat to this is if they pass their economics final, they get to stay. If they get kicked out, one of the preppies will lose access to his inheritance, and it goes to the villain, his evil cousin, blah, blah, blah. They never really get into the real relationship there. I would have liked to know more. Well, our villain hires three party girls. Party girls, prostitutes. I'm not sure what to call these girls. They seem to be a good-natured bunch anyway. To distract the boys from their economics final. Well, this goes according to the plan. But there's also a little bit of inference from the preppy's preppy girlfriends. And hilarity ensues. Did I miss any major points, boys?
Well, I'm going to start with it's weird through from the poster and the tagline all the way through the whole movie that one of the preppies is going to lose access to this fortune in a kind of vague way. But the other two guys are kind of along for the ride as far as like the stakes of this story. Like they're also going to get thrown out, but
and they're totally also going to get thrown out. They're equally, because the headmaster it describes them as, you know, like you're whatever the 8th, and I mean you're not going to live up to your family name and the fortune. I mean you get the feeling that they all have these fortunes that they're going to be kind of losing out on. But the villain of the piece, as you talked about there, Nick, is definitely only the villain of like one of them, really, but yet he is against all of them just by sheer proximity, I'm guessing.
He's doing these other two a favor essentially by getting them laid, the way I see it.
Well, and the weird thing is, right, is because and I think actually this is kind of inventive, is that only two of them have their preppy girlfriends. And one of them is a complete loser and doesn't have a preppy girlfriend at all. And so that adds a lot of tension to the story as well, which I actually thought was a good well, tension, of course. These movies are based on tension.
That's right.
And I think that would be Baird
who gets consistently cock-blocked through this entire film. Because the two preppy girlfriends will show up, ruin the moment when everyone's going to get laid, and Baird, who does not have a girlfriend, also has his like new girl, paid girl, wander off whenever that happens.
That's one of my there's so many great moments in this movie. Really,
I love this movie.
This one of the things about this, and like I'll start right off the top is like, when they are being chastised by the headmaster, the thing that amazed me, and this is really symptomatic of the whole movie, is that you're introduced immediately to the poor filmmaking choices that they make in this right off the bat. And that's something that I think is fantastic, because it's just like, hey, I'm a shitty director, and I'm going to show that immediately just for you. And then every time something else you watch something else and you're like, oh my God, what were they thinking? You're like, oh, well, obviously they don't know what they're doing. Because, you know, it's this really dark hall, which is okay. I mean, it's a little weird
more like a church than it does like a...
Yeah, yeah, like a cathedral. But it's so strange, because rather than doing the normal thing of starting out wide and moving in close, they start out close and go so wide that you can barely see anybody in the frame. And it's just like, wow, you've taken this and turned it upside down on its head, and it makes no sense to me. And I think the editor of the movie just used a Cuisinart to cut the movie, because there's so many times where I'm watching this movie and it's just like, why the hell did you insert that shot right there?
Well, and story-wise, that scene starts strangely, because for the rest of the film, the preppies are guys who are not getting laid because their girlfriends will not put out, which is what makes these strangers who have been paid to be friends with them, which is totally fine.
There's so much to unpack on this.
And that's what we're shown through the entire rest of the movie, is that they can't get any. But in the opening scene, the headmaster says that they have turned their dorm room into a den of bacchanalia.
Yeah,
I wasn't the only one who noticed that.
What exactly are they doing that isn't about like having women there?
And we did see their room later in the film. In a very odd, three single beds lined up.
These guys are, the guy is fighting for trying to pass his economics exam so he can get his $50 million inheritance. And these three rich preppies are in a basement loft, or sorry, an attic loft. That's like, if you were living, if this was your living conditions, you'd want to cross a border to somewhere. Because
but that's not even the school, right?
Like, no, that's their house.
That's their house. The three of them are, their beds are the size of a matchbook. and the three of them are in this loft, and you're like, they're supposed to be rich. Oh.
Two of them were from out of town. They say that several times. Oh, no, we're not locals.
You know,
we're from out of town.
They say that the rich and normal people really aren't all that different, apparently.
they like three single beds in a room for grown adults, same as everyone else.
Now, it's like, do you think that was the same set? Do you think that was the same set as later in the film when we see the girls' bedroom?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Because again, we have the single beds going on.
Yes, I think they just slightly dressed it up slightly different and had a slightly different camera angle. Like I don't know, man. These are the poorest rich people I've ever seen in my life.
The house is huge. The house is absolutely enormous.
Well, the house that show from the outside, sure. But yeah. this is where these guys live.
And there's a party scene later on, party being a relative term ultimately, but where you see the inside of the house, and there's no question, it's a beautiful house. It's a massive house. Obviously, it must have more than one bedroom, you know? And so I'm just thinking, his parents, who are never actually around, always, they must take five bedrooms for themselves and then leave him and his buddies with, like, the attic slum. You know, which I'm surprised there's no servants to live there, ultimately, now, you know, given the way this movie works. But
well, let's give the movie the benefit of the doubt. Maybe his parents just don't like him. We could have we don't see that much of them. We don't know the backstory. There could be a Harry Potter situation going on. We don't know.
That's literally somehow the most logical thing.
Well, and it's true, because ultimately, that was one of the things that really struck me about this movie, in this case, is that I didn't like them.
Well, that was something that was challenging for the whole movie, and a bit, given the timing of it, kind of subversive, that the heroes of this piece are preppies, who are the bad guys in every other movie we saw in the 80s.
Yeah, whereas, you know, the girls that were hired to...
They're the real heroes.
They are the real heroes.
They are, really, yeah.
And I really enjoyed those characters for the most part. I mean, there's the one who's completely looking for that whole sideline. Well, I'm not even sure why they made a fourth girl character to completely be, you know,
not to be a prostitute, maybe.
She does something.
Yeah, I think you guys are. I don't think this has been properly explained to the listeners.
No, who might not
have seen this film, though. They should go find it. It's online somewhere. Jim, where did you place this? Jim Cotta, there. Where did you put this online for people to go see?
good luck.
I tried and failed. So
I think find a place that you can swap VHS tapes to get this.
It's on Overload somewhere. You know what? I'll get those We Talk Comics guys or whatever to put it on their Twitter. And do that. Yeah. To the open load. Yeah, because people need to see this film. They must see this film. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. So, okay. At what point in this movie did confusion start to wash over your own face and never leave?
I mean, I had a grin on my face for the entire film. I love this movie. I was never confused. I was never lost. Every decision seemed to make sense to me.
I think for me, I enjoyed the fact that I was confused. You know, I think the fact, because again, it came down to part, so much of my confusion wasn't really because of the story. I mean, the story's not that hard to follow, but so much of it came down to the filmmaking choices, you know, just throwing random shit in there. And it was just like, hey, okay, whatever.
Yeah. So the three girls are hired to distract the guys. It is really couched as sleep with them until they can't study is kind of how it's presented. And then they hook up, and then the preppy girlfriends break, like, you know, mess with everything. And then the girls find the guys again. So this happens a couple of times, you know, kind of British multi-door comedy kind of style. And but there's a point where they go into this bar. To your idea of, like, just random things seem to happen. They go into a bar, which turns out to be a breakdancing go-go bar.
it's a disco. They're going to they literally say, we're going to the disco. I don't know what disco just has nude women dancing on stage like that.
Yeah,
but
topless women dancing on platforms and breakdancing. And no one else dancing, just everyone standing around.
They're not never gonna
dancing,
go.
Not in tune to, and not in time to each other.
This being a made-for-TV movie, it is. They're never going to go too far before they give you some nudity. Like, that was clearly the goal. It's like, let's have an idea for a scene. Anybody? And then it's like, yeah, can we fit some nudity in that? Yeah, then we're going to shoot it. Like, but I think I don't know that it's properly explained to people. Basically, this rich guy says to this guy who's, I think he's a janitor or gardener or something like that, who overhears that these guys are going to lose their inheritance, or this guy's going to lose his inheritance. So he's like his henchman. And he says to them, you know, like, oh, yeah, distract them with sex, basically. That's the best way to distract these guys. So now, 8 minutes and 39 seconds in is when the confusion washed over my face, when this henchman meets these girls. He's basically, these are the first women he's seen. He doesn't go and find sex workers or strippers or anything like that. Just some random women on the street. And he walks up to them and says, how'd you like $10,000 to basically distract these guys with sex? And these
four... No, he does know them.
Does he?
Yeah, because he goes to several locations looking for them.
All right. Either way,
and they do say earlier in the film when they see them, ooh, it's so-and-so.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that part. But basically, yeah, he walks up to them and he's just like, hey, you want $10,000? And one of them is like, I'll do it. Wait, are they preppies? I hate preppies. So three of them are just like, yeah, we'll do this. It's like they if they weren't hookers, they just sold their souls. To become hookers for $10,000, $3,333 apiece, right there on the spot. It's such a weird moment. I'll be honest with you, I don't understand it.
I actually appreciated the refreshing view of the sex worker in this film. Their sure enthusiasm to join the profession. I was refreshed. I mean, after these sex, a lot of these savage comedies. You know, there's some questionable stuff that goes on. Having what? The girl, yeah, there has been.
It happens from time to time, man.
Having the girls, and all the girls in this film are on the aggressive on this. The guys, I think they want to get laid, but by no means are they going too far out of the way to do it. They're trying to study. I thought this was a refreshing take for the genre.
Okay, so they're not trying to study, because one of them wants to study because he's like, I'm going to lose my inheritance. And the other guys are like, hey, we should go out. I can't stand this. I haven't gotten laid forever, or I got to get laid, you know. And he's got this girlfriend who, the first time we meet him, she's practically dry humping him in the middle of 40, 50 people. And then the next moment.
No, she was looking for a present. That girl was just stupid.
Well, that's it, right?
He was looking for a gift in his pocket, and he's taking an advantage.
Every part of this scene shows that she's just a horny little minx, basically, who wants it all the time.
She does not know what she's doing.
And then the next thing you know, nope, she's protecting her virginity, and he's not getting laid either. And it's just like, what?
That's one of my favorite moments is those couple of scenes with the two preppy girlfriends where they're like, you have to be very careful not to give up your virginity. And she talks like Katharine Hepburn.
Catch would go on to write and direct Poison Ivy and Strip to Kill and Strip to Kill 2. And yeah,
I had some challenges with the preppy accent for a while. the very nasally, because it's the bad guy voice. It's the voice of definitely the bad guys from Revenge of the Nerds, but from so many other 80s comedies. And I was supposed to be on their side. They've got the nasally, you know, and the Hamptons kind of voice.
I'll say Mixy. Yeah, I can't do. I wish I could do that voice, man. It's like everybody knows it, though. It's the, yeah, like the, yeah. It's just,
yeah, I mean, it would all devolve into a bad Kennedy impersonation.
that I can do.
Now, as we go along through the film here, so we do see the kind of sex that one of our heroes is having with his girlfriend, which is amazing. Yeah. So he takes his girlfriend home. She says, like, it's, you know, it's time to have thing. We're going to have our magic moment. So she goes inside the house, and there's like a glass window into the kitchen. She strips down, does like a striptease pole dance dry hump against the glass window. And he has to stay on the other side of it. That's how she's protecting her virginity.
That is one of my favorite scenes in any movie that we've watched so far. Because
that's where it was next level for me.
Yes.
Now, did Midnight Express come out before this or after?
I would assume, but I would think before.
Oh man, I would have laughed so hard if there was a "Oh Billy" in there. That worked so well against the glass.
Oh man, it was like, I just love that scene though. It's just like, because at first you don't know what's happening, and then when it slowly dawns on you that this
and he's getting into it. He's excited, yeah. Like he's licking the glass and he's
like, got a foot fetish, like, through the glass.
All, oh yeah, that was it. Like the foot fetish through the glass. Like if it was near the top, the foot fetish over the glass just, you know, like tips it right over. I absolutely love that scene. There was just no shortage of crazy. That right there being, I'm not sure. I think that was like 15 or 20 minutes into the movie. I mean, it's not a long movie, but that told you what you're in for.
This movie's a tight package, that's for sure.
And I think that's really successful for this movie, because I think a lot of these movies, they're not chock full of story.
What?
Necessarily. And so I think that you know, they run a little fast and loose with their plots. And so the movie being 80 minutes or slightly less really works out for it, because it does manage to go a lot faster. And I don't think they care about trying to extend things either. There's so much going on. And again, it's part of that throwing shit at you every minute. I mean, you know, just as you keep going through the movie, I mean, you forget about the bad guy for the longest time. Like he only appears, I think like two or three times in the entire movie. And it's just, And you're just like, oh yeah, him, right? I almost forgot that they were that there was some sort of problem going on here.
And the focus in any of his scenes is never on him.
Yeah,
because no, I mean, he's always like licking some dominatrix's armpit or something as he gives orders to kill people.
There's a lot of fetishes in this movie. There's, you know, there's the foot fetish. He's got an armpit fetish. I mean, like
you're making it sound like these are unusual.
Well, I mean, not for some people, of course. Not for some people.
No, don't you judge me.
there's a fantastic scene, I think, where the guys are all in bed, and they're like, so what kind of sex are we going to wind up having? And the one guy describes the kind of sex that they're going to wind up having with these girls. And the sheets are raising up the whole time.
Oh my God, I love it.
And then the phone rings, and it's not the girls. It's I think it's the girlfriends at that point. And the sheets just go like, poof.
Right, there's a very homoerotic undertone to this film.
Very particularly, yeah. I mean, basically, he's talking them off. Like he's
it goes on forever.
Comfortable length of time, yeah.
Stan was saying that this movie is cut fairly. Like we never linger. That is the one scene we linger on forever.
I don't know. There's a few things that linger on. You talk about the disco that they go to, and there was a guy in the disco they had found who I don't know where they found him, but they're like, shit, he's a good dancer. Film him. And then they film him for like 2 minutes. Right. And then they have a little scene, and then they cut back to him for like another 15 minutes, I think. And then they cut away from him, and they cut back to him dancing again. And it's just like, fuck, we can fill at least a minute with this guy. Like, they just for no reason.
It's true. I noticed that. But I want to say one last thing about the moment in the bedroom is that it's I found it amazingly funny, because I'm watching it and I'm like, wow, this is a Playboy Channel production and they're doing a Penthouse letter. Meanwhile, reading it out. But one of the things that I found awesome is that there's a point later in the movie where they phone where the preppy girlfriends call the police on the Beast girls, because they drive a big van that's painted with flames and called the Beast, which is awesome in its own way. But they call the police, and so they wind up getting picked up at a bar, and the cop knows them, so obviously they must be sex workers of some kind and get into trouble yes. a lot. But so
can you explain to me then how they just showed up all working at the party where they met the guys? How'd they get those jobs?
Well, they just drove in, basically. We're the help.
Oh, they didn't get the jobs. They pretended to have the jobs.
They just pretended to have the jobs.
Yeah, they didn't get hired. They just just bluffed their way in.
But and so then as the scene goes on, so the girls are gone, and then the rest of the guys in the bar are like, "Oh, but it was those preppies that told the cops on these guys. You know, they're not good people." And I'm like, "Wow, you guys know a lot about what's going on at these jobs." But then the preppies show up and they're like, "Oh, we are gonna get you guys." And so they start like doing the usual, like, you know, "Oh, it's the little bit of this, like the arm wrestling where one of the preppies wins and stuff like that." And you're like, "Oh, okay, I can see where this is going." And then they challenge them to a game of poker.
Okay,
and then you realize that it's a game of strip poker. And they're
well,
in the back
hey,
room.
I don't know. Wait. Are you saying there's something wrong with a bunch of 20-year-old straight macho guys wanting to play strip poker with each other?
I was actually wondering if this was a gay bar and they just failed to establish that.
I don't think they wanted
it. I actually appreciated the guys not being like all foofy and stuff.
But they wandered into the Blue Oyster.
the director, Chuck Vincent, I mean, who's a fairly well-known porn director, and then went on to direct this and Hollywood Hot Tubs and another one we could have picked, Wimps, and a few films like that. He was a gay man, a famous gay man, one of the first in Hollywood people affected with the AIDS virus that and passed away from it. So it all does make sense, like that it would have that undertone from that perspective.
Yeah, you talk about that kind of recurring homoerotic undertone, and like eight guys playing a game of strict poker. They go into the back room of this bar, and the back room looks more like a shipping container. It's like long, narrow room with blank walls, and yeah, they have a game of strip poker, and then they take photos of the preppies once they're naked. It takes a strange turn for a little bit there.
Oh yeah, that is just like that's just one of those moments where I'm like, wow, this movie is so fucked up.
Oh yeah, it's just there's so many moments like that though where
and then the end of the movie is just
no, we can't get to the end. We have to talk about the preppy girls discovering their sexuality.
That is true.
Because bar none is the best scene in the movie.
That's the one I talk about later.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's the moment where the bossy preppy girl takes the stupid one, and oh my god, there's so much to unpack from that scene. Because like, what do you think? Okay.
I had to watch it at least four times before
I'm still completely watching it.
So but, they go into
there's
the...
There's no nudity in that scene. This whole movie's packed full of nudity.
No, there is.
Except that scene.
I'm sorry that scene worked for me.
but like, so they go into the closet of the one girl like, and it's right next to her parents' bedroom. And this is the thing that also amazes me, is that they managed to find the exact moment when her parents are having sex. And I get the feeling that preppy women never want to have sex. So I'm like, what the fuck are you doing having sex in the middle of the day? It's like 2 p.m. Why are you having sex right now? And obviously the mother is not interested. You know, she's like, oh, this is so great. Looking away. But, and so then.
It's kind of like a 1984 version of Paris Hilton checking her Instagram while she's having sex.
Yeah. And so then these two girls, they listen for a bit, and then they go to her bedroom, and she's like, okay, so this is what you do. You know, you turn your head, you rotate your hips, and the other one is like flopping around like a dead fish, honking and screaming. And it's fantastic because of the way that she's doing it. And I mean, very attractive girl, very stupid in the movie, but just as you listen to them, and then meanwhile, the father, he's finished having sex.
Now, I'm so uncomfortable. I think there was a... I was unsure if it was the father. I think there's a throwaway line earlier that he's not the father. He's like a prospective stepfather.
You just want that to believe that. there's a point where she calls him dad.
Yeah.
So I don't know what more you need.
I thought she called him Brad.
So where is Brad? So what's actually happening in the scene is they're exploring their sexuality. What she's actually doing is training her in how to fake an orgasm, in missionary position.
Well, because the
which involves a lot of flailing your arms.
Yes,
is how it's demonstrated.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's not. I mean, maybe if they had watched her mother, then they would have known that the flailing of the arms is not required to this. But
it was good for me.
But it's so awesome because there's both sitting there flailing their arms, screaming and flailing, and the dad goes like hears them outside the door, and he rushes up to like the roof or whatever, and he starts climbing down with a rope.
He repels from the roof so that he can peep on them.
And he's totally looking, and then at the end, like of course he falls because this is a movie like that, and he falls and he winds up like hanging and choking himself out, and you're just like, wow. Again, I guess there's another fetish for you.
Check them all off.
Well, I mean,
what I loved about the girls is like the little nuanced things, like the correcting of the leg position. I mean, we were so far out, like in weird zone, and all of a sudden the girl that's obviously in charge corrects the leg position, like, ooh, you don't want to spread your legs too far for him.
that's right. It's about six inches.
Yeah, she actually physically adjusts
her sister. Were they sisters or just friends?
Just friends. Don't make it gross. I will. This movie's.
They shared a room. I was a little confused on that point.
Everyone seems to only have single beds in a shared room. That's just the way people hang out. I give this movie credit. This movie's 1984, and it would be more than 30 years before dad finds daughter and her friend as a porn genre to actually appear in mainstream.
So very ahead of its time. Very ahead of its time.
Yeah. Forward thinking that way.
I still think
she said Brad. That was in her dad.
You just keep working on that theory.
Whatever gets you tonight.
We should talk about the ending and then go into the scoring on this beautiful piece. Because the ending, everything happens all at once. Wow. I don't even know where you go. Like, so I'll start for myself with the Beast van as all the girls. They're like, hey, we're not gonna let this happen. All the good bad girls are in there, and the one preppy that doesn't have a girlfriend is in there, and they drive in because the preppy girls are seducing their boyfriends, trying to get them to propose.
they realize they got to put out if they want to keep up. Basically,
those were some committed prostitutes.
But man, they're so focused on the task at hand.
Well, and they fell in love. They fell in love, man.
Yeah. But, which is why I don't think they were prostitutes.
I don't think they fell in love. No, I think they just had a goal. They wanted that $10,000. I thought they liked the boys.
I think it's just strong work ethic.
Yeah. Hey, $10,000 is ten. I got the feeling these girls could have made themselves something with an extra $10,000. I mean, true, it was probably only beauty school, but I mean, they were goal-orientated girls.
But I love it because they're driving this van and they drive through the big party that's happening and they drive into this house and the house falls apart like it's made of balsa wood.
Yeah.
It's just this awesome moment. Like all the walls just fall down. And meanwhile, right here in the middle, it's like you have these two girls and these guys, and they just grab the guys and drive off. And one thing about this movie is there's a lot of moments where things are sped up. Where they speed the film up and just, it's like, you know, and that was kind of one of those moments where they just grabbed those guys and drove off in a moment of sped up frenzy. And like, that was great. But then you have this ending where, of course, the villain shows up, and I'm not even sure I can properly describe.
You can't. You can't. You have no chance.
Like he's gonna shoot them with a fucking like machine gun that looks like it was out of a like gangster movie of the 1920s.
A full on Tommy gun.
Yeah, full on Tommy gun. And then of course you got this you know the soap opera actor who shows up and has no idea what's going on.
Wait, you're underselling this again.
please, Jack, please.
The four women, the one of them has a crush, the one that hates the preppies, but she does like this soap opera actor who was at the disco but denied being her. And she, every time she sees him on the street or thinks she sees him, she takes off after him like a mad fan, you know, going after the Beatles or something, right?
Well, because the number one thing that she wants out of him is the chance to sit on his face.
Yes, she really wants to get on his face. That is, and by the way, I have to say, for most of these movies, you'll notice that they can have the nudity, but there's usually very little profanity. Not this one. This movie was full of profanity. So she wants to sit on his face, and so there's a point where they need somebody to go in, infiltrate or something like that into the house. I don't even know what was going on. I never really did, and the girls are, they have to call ahead, and any of them could call because they're using a fake accent and call ahead, but no, it has to be her. So they convince her that they'll bring they're going to show up and get this soap opera actor to show up and introduce them. And then later on, she's like, she asks them a couple times, is it going to happen? And the one girl's like, yeah, it's going to happen. And then at the end he does, but we never see a scene where we know why he's there, where they met him, they never, it's just like, if you knew it the whole time, why were you being such a bitch and not having him?
No, they do explain that. There's a throwaway line in there that they say, oh, I just pretended to be a casting agent.
One of the other they're not prostitutes says that she was the assistant to a casting agent, and so yes, we get to have a time's up moment where one of our female heroes uses the casting couch on this actor, promising him a job, and she's not a casting director. She has nothing to do with movies.
How am I missing all this stuff in this movie?
I have no idea, dude.
You're distracted by the boobs. You should have watched it three times like I did.
Well, maybe that was it. I was too distracted by other stuff. Okay.
Parts. I watched parts of it more than that.
But yeah, like when this. Because this thing just wraps up in like basically a hail of I don't know what the fuck, and which is perfect. And then as we go out to credits, there's this scene of just room doors, and you just hear snippets of conversations from most of the couples, because I don't think you hear everybody, and it's just. Almost everybody does wind up getting a girl at the end of it, though. So it's a happy ending. And of course, our guys manage to ace their economics test, and life goes on as it should. You know, it's a wonderful. Well,
let's bring that full circle into the problem they were having. So they're going to get thrown out if they fail this economics exam. It's like the last straw. Because he says they've been failing everything.
Yeah.
And so they got to pass this. This is like, if you fail this, when you go. Now, we get to the happy ending, but they're only freshmen. Like, so they're intend, and they say they're intending to go to law school. They got 6 more years of school before they actually accomplish the goal of, like, you know, getting the $50 million inheritance.
here's the way I like to look at it, Jim. I like to look at it that you rewatch this movie and it's the next year. And you rewatch it again.
Literally every course they take for 6 years.
Yes.
It's exactly like this.
Yes, and it just keeps occurring. And you just forget the moment where they're called freshmen. And just insert your own. If they'd made a sequel, then it would have actually just been like that.
The college version of Groundhog Day. It is short enough that you could just watch it like 8 or 9 times in a row. That's fair.
Yes. It's
are we fantastic. Are we off to the scoring?
I think, Jim, we should go off to the scoring, yes.
All right. So we rate these movies in 5 categories. As always, they are none of those categories are objective quality. These are about the enjoyment of the movie. So our first category is called Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
Well, I got to give this one an 8 because I found this movie extremely schlocky, absolutely insane, and I loved the vast majority of it. So it's got a high marks from me.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm not going to go that high. I'm only going to give it a 7. It has lots of schlocky moments, but on a whole, I don't think it was marketed as. We've watched schlockier movies than this. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, no, I think that sums it up about perfectly. I'll stick with a 7 as well. I think you nailed it there. What the hell's your name again? Nick.
Nick. Nick Boxer.
Nick Boxer.
Hey, Nick Boxer? Really?
I am Nick Boxer.
Where are you going with this, Jack?
I gave it. I just, that was it. I said 7.
And okay, so it's a 7 for the movie, and was that a 5 for Nick Boxer's name? That was a weird, direction there. I was gonna, it's been too long between episodes here. I was gonna go 7, and then I remembered that during one of the many weird scenes later on in the film, the bad guy is being walked on by the girls in heels. And there's a boom mic.
Scene, isn't it?
There's a boom mic that drops into shot twice during that scene.
There's like, actually the boom. The boom appears several times.
Yeah, like way in at one point. So that knocks it up. Like, I'm going to give it an 8 because that's nothing says schlock like a boom mic in the shot. All right, our next category is called More Heart Than Budget. Stan.
This thing was exploding with heart and absolutely completely lacking in budget. It seemed like. I mean, you talk about this movie looked like. What I mean, they didn't spend it on the actors, you would think. So it looked like they just spent
they
it
had
on
some of the people that playing like parents and you know the headmaster and those guys were on Broadway and Shakespearean actors, that type of thing. So they did have some good people in really small roles.
Yeah, for sure. But I get the feeling that like most of the houses were like they were allowed to use the front because
We talk about the room, the bar where they are do the strip poker. There's no way you're convincing me that they didn't just find some boiler room somewhere, set up a table.
Oh yeah, well, and using the same room over and over again. So, yeah. To me, in this case, I'm going with a 7 on this one. It felt very very hearty.
Yeah. I'm going with a 7 as well. I think it has tons of heart, but because the director was an established porn director, I feel that needs to be punished, so I'm going to subtract 3. So that's how I get to 7.
Well, I mean, it's a low-budget movie with shitty lighting and shitty sound.
And shitty editing.
And shitty editing and shitty short story choices. It's like... It's got a charm and an appeal that surprises you, but it's not like you're not like wow, they this looks so much better than what they spent on it. You're like, nope, this looks like they spent nothing on it. So I'll give it a 4.
I'm gonna agree with all of that and give the opposite number for it, though. I went all the way up to a 9. I thought that they just went for it. This is like a 90s independent movie that was, I mean, for some reason made by Playboy.
they got Chuck Vincent guy that directed it. I mean, he ended up with a deal with, after kind of having some success in porn and wanting to go into B movies, he ended up with a, you know, contract with them. And he also made Hollywood Hot Tubs and a Nerd Alert, my facts here, but you know, stuff like that, like I say. So, I mean, that's obviously it. I mean, it's just that, you know.
Extra credit for spending as much money on topless women as possible. That's where I end up with.
That's true. Why did we all never right. mention? We're getting into it now, so I don't have to.
All right, I'm sure that we've covered many of them, but maybe not everything. Our next category is called the WTF moments, the moments that make no sense being in any movie ever. Stan.
Well, I marked down 3, and obviously, and I mean, I had to bring them up during the course of the show. The makeout door absolutely struck me, the sheet hard-ons, the strip poker with dudes, and absolutely the one that I didn't write down, but Nick, I'm so glad you brought it up, was the girls learning, training on how to fake an orgasm, and then, of course, the dad or Brad choking himself out trying to sneak a peek. I give this one a 9. I loved it.
Yeah, there are a lot of WTF moments in this, but I have to say every WTF in this movie makes it stronger.
Well, usually they do.
Well, you know, sometimes I'm confused by them, but in this movie, I was sort of like, okay, she's stripping by the window. I like this. I can create a backstory where this makes sense. Yeah, in some ways it's a choose your own adventure movie, but on a whole, the pieces they gave us, I loved. I'm going all out 10 on this. This is where this movie makes its point.
I think it's a 9. I mean, there's so many. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out. I'm still trying to figure out why it is that these apparently prostitutes, I found out now, why it is that they're not in school, considering that they can cram for one night of testing and just ace it because they got the other guys to. They basically like
they really gave up on their $10,000 quickly in that.
Yeah. So instead to help these guys study and they ace it, and the helping them study is a scene one of the guys pacing back and forth, then the girl asking questions from a book, him knowing the answer, and you're like, fuck, well, of course he knows it now. And
then, did anyone else think they were gonna play some sort of strip, answer question thing in that scene? I really thought they were going to go, you answer the question, you used to get to see a boob, or they didn't go there, but they could have.
So, but I'd like to do a little role playing. Okay. What have you, I'd like to play a little, let's do a little bit here. I'm going to be, I don't know, like an executive producer or the movie studio head or the head of Playboy or something. And one of you be, I don't know, the director or the writer or producer, somebody representing the movie. And I'll be, okay.
The director, writer, and producer, we're all the same guy.
Who's going to be that? Who's going to be that person? Who wants to play? Who wants to role play with me?
I don't really want to go here.
Who wants to play the producer?
All right, I will. Let's do this.
Okay. All right. Hey, I just watched the raw cut. Good film there. I think we got ourselves a classic.
I'm wondering if we did. I want to do some reshoots to fill this out to a good 85 minutes.
Ah, fuck that. We don't need that. Here's what we need. I got an idea. All right. It's a rough cut. What we need is some music. So what I'd like you to do, what's really going to make this movie pop, is if you go out and find the shittiest soundtrack you can. Go out and find the shittiest songs you've ever heard. And then when you bring them to me, I'll tell you that's not shitty enough for Preppy to really make it. the kind of movie that we want to give to people. We want people to be taking toothpicks, right? And we want them to pop open in their eyes, to pop them open so they can't blink, so they can see all the tits. And at the same time, we want to take these toothpicks and shove them in our ears so we can't hear these songs that are so awful in this movie. That'll make it memorable. What the fuck were they doing when they picked... It's not, and make sure it's not one bad song. I need at least six unbelievably shitty songs in this movie.
Oh, I want the soundtrack. Okay, so you got a nine, a ten, a nine. I am gonna break from the pack and go nine. I could start this movie at any point, and I would go, what the fuck is going on in this scene? There is one incredibly subtle thing that I missed. I made a second pass through kind of watching sections of it, and I missed a bit the first time. At one point, the fourth girl poses as a student who's researching sex, and she wants to show porn to the guys. And they're very nice to help her out with her studies by watching porn. And her scheme is she's going to show them porn so that they're all horny, so that when the other girls show up, they're like, hey, girls, I bet that we can make this happen, which is just a strange plot point. But they start the porn, and all you don't see you're like, the camera's behind the TV, so all you do is hear it. You don't see what's on screen. And what you hear is, once upon a time, there were three lonely girls on a small cucumber farm.
Yes, that's right.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
So that's nine.
You know, that wasn't as good, though, as the pantomime, the preppy girl, the naive preppy girl does later in the film when she sees that same porn. Where she just points towards her mouth and jumps up and down.
Yes, she's trying to explain to them that this is something wrong. And she's trying to explain it's a porn, and she can't say the word porn, so she just pantomimes blowing somebody.
our next category. I don't know if we're going to be able to pick up anything. Are there any moments that are memorable from this film for you, Stan?
I actually took two lines out of this movie that I absolutely loved. Bayard at one point says, "Snapper is all the same. Rich, poor, whatever. They all leave you hanging."
That's true. That was such a great line.
And then there's this great, the blonde girl who, because like basically the hookers are essentially like Josie and the Pussycats, and the blonde girl is Melody, and so that's kind of how I thought of her the whole
time.
They
really should have established they were a band. That would explain the.
It really
that would explain the van. But at no time does music come into this.
No. But there's this great moment where like. You know, she is. It's during that party moment, and the guy that's into her says, "Where'd you get those mammaries?" She's like, "I got them from my mom. She got them from my grandmother." And the guy goes, "Family heirlooms."
That's a great.
This is a great movie. This really is. You know,
like there's not a lot of other stuff, but you know, like the thing is, the jokes are actually kind of funny in this movie. When the unlike some other movies that we've watched, the jokes hit in this case. I'm not gonna go super high, but I will give it a six.
Memorable moments. You know what? I'm going with eight just for the let's teach the preppy girl sex scene. I loved it. I have to agree with you, though. The dialogue in this movie is fantastic. They told my favorite joke from the 80s, what's a dick for?
I really hope
this predated Spies Like Us. Because, you know, as an 11, 12-year-old, I told that joke a lot.
Tell it a lot now.
Yeah. What's a dick for? So great.
You got a dick fur in your hair. What's a dick for?
And yeah, actually, this is Before Spies Like Us. This is 1984.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Spies Like Us is 1985. So,
yeah. Awesome. But I don't think they saw this. I'm just guessing. To me, again, the WTFs are those moments where you're like, why did they choose to do this? And these memorable moments were moments where on purpose they tried to make it memorable. So the only thing for me, I think it's really lacking in that, except for one thing, and that is the orgasm teaching on the bed writhing around scene, which I will never forget ever. So that
it is shot well. The rest of the movie shot awfully.
So I'm giving it a six.
A six? All right. That's a fantastic scene. That is a truly great scene. That's the one that when I was talking to my wife Lacey afterward, I said, you know, she's like, Lacey Underall. Lacey Underall. She said, like, you know, what was the funniest part? I don't know. Well, there's this scene where there's like fake orgasm school. There's also the more uptight ditzy of the preppy girls when she walks in on the guys and the prostitutes fully clothed making out at like having a little kind of room party, and she keeps asking, is this an orgy? Like, very innocently, is this an orgy? Is this what an orgy looks like? It's such a cute moment. Three girls on a small cucumber farm. So I'm giving that a seven, and we're into our last category, which is, let's go back to your producer talking to the director here, the crazy concept. How out of the box is this thing, Stan?
You know, that's the funny thing is that the idea of like, okay, guy can't inherit the family fortune unless he passes an exam. And you know, somebody wants him to not pass that exam. That is not crazy at all, per se. But
no, it's a plot of Billy Madison, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But it's everything else that occurs in and around it that they threw in there. So I have to go a little low, because the concept by itself is just not that crazy. It's all the extra stuff that's totally nut bar. But I'm going to go with a four.
Yeah. This does not score high on the pitch scale. I'm going a little higher, five. But you know what? You're pitching the Playboy Network. You go teen comedy, lots of tits. Yeah, you got this movie. The sheer genius of what happens. I don't think it came into the pitch meeting. It just, that's what we're buying, a teen movie with tits. So, yeah, five.
Yeah, this is pretty much, I think you guys pretty much summed it up perfectly there. It's I'm not even going that high. This is the downfall of this movie for scoring as high as I would like it to, is that this is the most basic simple plot that you could come up with, and let's face it, it's not like it's the genius in this movie is the fact that there is no genius behind this movie. Like,
yeah, the genius of this movie really is incompetence in a lot of ways.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I'm just going to give it a three.
All right, I'm going to be a little bit higher because I think, I mean, essentially it's the plot of a porn movie with the sex taken out and then filled back out to what is almost a full length movie, but it's, you know, properly a B movie length. So I'm going to give it a five here. And this brings us to the end of our scoring. And as always, we have six secret modifiers every season, three possible pluses, three possible minuses. This movie falls into two of those six. It picks up an extra point for being under 80 minutes. It is actually 79 minutes and change. It also picks up an extra point for having nudity in the first 5 minutes of the film. There's a dominatrix about 4 minutes into this movie, which is amazing.
Oh, just by its skin of its teeth.
Yeah, just about, just a hair over 4 minutes.
Skin of something.
skin. There's skin. That's all that matters. That's where you get the point when it's skin. Which brings us to a whopping 71 out of 100, which definitely puts it in the upper echelon of the movies we've seen so far.
Just under Gymkhana. That makes sense. I don't know why it makes sense, but it does.
I'm like, what the? You caused me WTF moments there, Nick. Your name's Nick, right?
Yeah. That is actually, it pops it just above Gymkhana.
Yeah, yeah.
Gymkhana came in at 67.5. So, yeah, it's. I think it's actually in the top three or four of what we've done so far.
It's a classic. This is, you know, for me, the way I look at these movies is I look at them and I say, would I watch this movie again and like in another like month or in another week even? And there's a lot of the movies where it would be like, oh, I'd need some time off on that one. Preppies is not one of those movies. Preppies is one of those movies that I'm like, oh, I could watch Preppies again right now. what am I doing?
There is that.
So yeah, like that's why this one's a real winner as far as I'm concerned. Well, what do you say, guys? Are we pretty close to wrap this one up? And should we tell everybody what's coming up next?
I don't know what else we do.
Well, I'd sure like to know what's coming up next.
All right, the next movie on our list is a movie called The Big Bet, and that's another interesting one, right? And it's different. It's got some differences from this one, which is great. So I'm looking forward to talking about that one with you guys for next episode. All right, Jim, why don't you tell us where people can find us on the internet?
All right, we are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo, and use the hashtag Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo when you're talking about your favorite B movies. And the next time we meet and we talk about The Big Bet, if you're following along, someone who is not us has posted The Big Bet on YouTube as of right now. And, you know, take a watch of that and, you know, join in the fun.
All right.
But someone who's not us but might be us has posted Preppies on the internet.
Find it. Beg, borrow, or otherwise Preppies for sure.
Yes. Well, maybe it was Brad who, from what I understand, was visiting his dominatrix this episode. so unfortunately,
Brad, I forgot he was even on the show.
It's easy to do sometimes, but all right. Does anybody else have anything to add before we wrap this bad boy up? It doesn't sound like it. All right, for Jim.
I want to say one last thing. How's your alligator hanging?
All right. For Jim, for Jack, for Nick, for Brad, I am 8th Dan Stan Adu, and thank you for listening to Season 2 of Nerds, Jocks, and Preppies, the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!